The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
You may recognise our guest this week's Thursday interview from TV shows like Taskmaster and Man Down, or from stand-up comedy stages around the UK and Ireland. He is a comedian, writer, actor, and even worked as a doctor before hanging up his stethoscope to pursue comedy. Welcome to the show, Mike Wozniak.
Thank you for having me.
We are delighted to have you. We have something very much in common.
Yeah?
I used to be a doctor too.
Did you really?
I did, yeah. And there's very few people like you and I who leave the institutionalized halls of medicine.
Can I just go now?
But it is an unusual thing, and we're a rare breed.
What type way?
I was a GP for 20 years.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Blimey, you did more than me. I only worked for about 5 years.
I was cautious. I did like being a doctor. We'll get into actually.
Stay with us for more on Doctors on Call.
No, but I did. But anyway, I was also then, I started dabbling in the media. And so here we all are.
Yeah.
There you go.
Really?
I know. Okay. It's a strange thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, people will know you well off our screens, particularly from things like Taskmaster. But having been a doctor, how did you make the move?
Well, so I don't know what the medical system is like in Ireland, but in the UK is very, there's a big sketch scene. There's the medical review. Every medical school has it. So there's this sort of amateur sketch, generally speaking, pretty awful amateur sketch scene.
It's like medical footlights kind of thing, is it?
That kind of thing, exactly. So I'd always loved comedy since I can remember. And here was a chance to do some comedy, but with other people. So, and then that's it. I've got the bug and you can't let it go. Couldn't let it go. Just kept going. And that sort of,
but your family must have said, "Oh my God, we've got him to medical school. He's a doctor. This is so
hugely
brilliant."
Disappointed.
And you're leaving to go scrap around on
dreadful. Just when you think, when the bird has flown, and you think, okay, great, he's got a job and a profession and a pension and all that kind of stuff. We can relax. We can enjoy our retirement. All that kind of stuff. No.
You know. Were you always the kind of the funny guy in the family? Were you always kind of cracking jokes?
I don't know. Maybe within the family, but I mean, among my school friends, they're definitely funnier people than me. And my sister, I've got a twin sister, she's funnier than me. Most of my friends,
she must be pretty
I was often soaking it up, I think. Yeah. You know, I've been the recipient of funniness. My mother's very funny. They've always been very funny people in my life.
But there is, it's funny you say about me with family disappointment, because I echo that. Mm. But a bit like what you're saying, I know what I started doing. Actually, I used to work with Shane long, long ago and started doing broadcasting, weirdly. But you get bitten by something else and you realise you've just spent like donkey's years training to become a doctor, and now you're really into something else.
Yeah. And that's where the passion
is. It's still a brave...
Every night I wasn't on call, I couldn't wait to get to that, you know, open mic gig or...
It's still a brave move to do it.
Well, people say that, but for me... I think, at the time the stakes were low, or felt low. I think that's partly me just having quite a sort of privileged background and being someone who grew up with a bit of a safety net, but also at the time, I mean, I didn't have kids, I didn't have a mortgage, I didn't even have a dog, you know, so I also had a very supportive girlfriend who became my wife, who very much encouraged me. So it felt, and it also felt like, oh, if this goes completely, you know, if there's a total pig's ear in a couple of years' time, I can...
You can always go back.
That was the idea. But
Dr. Wozniak.
I sort of did burn the ships a bit, and I just sort of went for it. I mean, if I'd had the bug later, I don't know if I'd been so reckless.
And never mind about the scariness of jumping ship from medicine, because that is... But I've read so many things where comedians say the scariest thing in the world is to get up in front of a live audience.
Yeah, although I got used to that before I did stand-up properly. I'd got very used to that from student sketch shows and, you know, fringe plays and student plays and all that. I'd spent a fair bit of time on stage and I'd kind of emceed student events and that. So being on stage
was... So your performer nerves had been sort of...
Yeah, but it meant that the very first few times I did it, it was very, 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 very scripted. So I was basically going up there with this sort of little monologue.
Learning off by heart, kind of?
Yeah, oh, completely. And I think I wasn't ready in any way, shape or form for any form of disruption. Yeah, so that you just got to get knocked
about. Was Man Down, was that the big kind of breakthrough, or did it come before that?
No. That was joyous. That was a sitcom I did, Greg Davies' sitcom, and... That was literally a dream come true. I'd always loved sitcom, wanted to be part of a sitcom, and that was the first big job I got. And that was a very, very happy time making that.
Is he as cool as he appears on TV?
He's not cool at all. He's ridiculous. He's a ridiculous man. But it's a lot of fun making a show. It's not easy to film because it's very funny and he will laugh at all his own jokes. So it takes a while to get a
scene
done.
Is there competition between comedians like to try and out-funny each other?
Usually not, because I think most of us will switch it off a bit when we're backstage. I'd say there's a handful that it's never switched off, and they're just funny all the time.
Funny slash annoying.
Like Tim Key or Celia AB. These people are just relentlessly funny all the time. But most of us, like, we sort of power down.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
We're quite happy for someone else to do the chatting in the
green
room.
We love a bit of gossip here on The Hard Shoulder, so I do have to ask you. You roast Ruby Robinson for Sky Arts.
Yeah.
Kim Cattrall, what was she like?
She was sort of wonderful and strange, and she was kind of what you hoped, really, because she was this superstar, sort of parachuted in to do this weird little sort of short film, effectively.
But she does that. She appears in kind of offbeat things.
She's up for mixing it up. She doesn't always have to just be a romantic lead or whatever it may be. But she's the epitome of the kind of artist through and through, right? So she's ethereal and she's got a bit of mystique and she's
pretty
glamorous.
Formidable as well.
Is she formidable just because she's super sexy and gorgeous and people will...
She's formidable because the way she doesn't talk to the other one in Sex and the
City. I kind of respect that about her.
Professional. She was very friendly on set. She was very, very professional as well. So she took it very seriously. But she had the wow factor.
Yeah.
She's one of those people where you meet and you're like,
She's a very fine comic.
People are superstars,
right? Okay.
In fairness, she's a very fine comic actress, though.
Yeah,
I mean, she's got the chops. And I do
Mannequin, I think, is the first time I saw her. And
me
she's
too.
Very funny in that. You know,
and I do kind of respect her for the SJP thing. I think she holds.
I wasn't saying it was a bad thing,
but obviously, you have now this extensive career where you're famous and you're respected, and you've all these strings to your bow. But you're clearly, I'm projecting wildly, but someone who likes challenges, because otherwise I don't think you'd have done to yourself what you've done to yourself with all the things that you've done. So what is next?
What is next? Well, the main thing at the moment is I'm touring, which is always it always for me boils down to stand up. That's the thing.
That's what it comes back to.
Yeah, and that's the kind of the big love and the sort of purest form of it and the most intense form of it, and just you can't rest on your laurels with stand up. Even if you've done something like Taskmaster and they know you and they trust you and we've come for a good night out, if it's half baked, you're going to know about it very, very quickly.
So, the hecklers.
Yeah, or even worse, just a bored audience. I mean, hecklers are one thing, you know. But
how do you, anyone can shout up, Statler and Waldorf, rubbish or whatever.
Yeah.
But how do you deal with someone who's like a funny heckler who's actually like,
That can be grist to the mill. That can be, I mean, because the show that I'm touring at the moment is the second half of it in particular is quite interactive, and the audience is in a mystery element. The audience are invited to choose their own adventure. Which part should we try and unpack? So I've had some brilliant contributions so far.
Those are the kind of shows that I like to sit at the back. Do you know? I hate being near
the
front.
Single people out?
No, I with this show I let them come to the fore.
Okay,
because I find normally if you single people out, one of two things happens. Either you've just fixed on someone because they're making eye contact with you, just because they're engaged and they're being polite, and actually they'll just clam up and they're terrified. Or there's this person who's sort of jittering, ready to go, and they're too enthusiastic.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and doesn't necessarily work.
And then they're never going to get back in their box.
Wasn't there a guy who didn't like something you said or didn't like the show and took pretty extreme action?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I mean, there's a man who threw me down the stairs once.
Wow, I didn't mean that extreme. I hadn't heard that story.
Yeah.
I thought was it a former RAF guy who...
Oh, God, yeah. That was when I was doing sketch. That's when we took a... Basically, a friend of a friend of a friend invited our sketch group to come and entertain some RAF people in a base on Anglesey, Inismon. And it just hadn't occurred to us what the R might stand for. And we had a song about the Queen Mum. This is like 20 years ago. which we were very proud of. But we're just young idiots. It just hadn't occurred that these people may have made a...
Was it less than flattering about the Queen?
It wasn't flattering, and we hadn't occurred
and
to
you
these
forgot the Royal
they,
in they Royal
may have
Air
made
Force
a vow to the late Queen and her then relatives. And one of the senior some squadron leaders just walked out and set off the fire alarm. And
end of gig.
Come back to someone threw you down the stairs.
Come back to who threw you down the stairs?
That was
why?
In Kent. That was in Canterbury. I don't know if you know Kent particularly.
Not well enough.
No, you don't need to. It's I went through a spate of gigging in Kent quite regularly because I was living in London at the time, and it was easy to get to. But every gig I went. There was a disaster. And the last time I went there was in Canterbury, and there was a man who really didn't like what I was doing. He made that very clear throughout the show. And he clearly felt he hadn't made it clear.
Why did he go?
And he waited for me at the end.
Was he aggressive throughout the show?
Like, it was aggressive hostile. Heckling. It was not unpleasant heckling. It wasn't just like, you're rubbish, and then he went to the bar, and it wasn't, you know, he wasn't trying to be funny. He was just complaining. And then it was a mixed bill show. And then and I think I was on in the middle, you know, so he had to wait for me for a while, waited till I came out and it was an event from a kind of above a pub, and he threw me down the stairs quite skillfully. I mean, it was a single motion down I went, smooth.
Man
He'd been
down.
A great fly half, you know.
Wow.
He was in the wrong trade, that guy. And I cut my losses.
And ran.
Yeah, I'm not a fighter. Do you know what I mean?
That's an insane story.
Yeah, so... Even if you think you've worked a show out, and if okay, I'm really proud of the show, I love the show, I've got it right. At some point, the last show I toured, for example, was very prepared because it was a big old story, really, about a bit of mythology in the family. And even then, there'll be someone who's like, no, I want something else to happen now. You're like, are you sure? I have planned a show. I've been working on this for quite a long time. No, I'm going to heckle. And you've just got to be ready.
Got to roll it.
Yeah, I think you do. Yeah.
What are you proudest of?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Crumbs. That's a tricky one. I mean, my dog has a very high standard of life.
You've given him everything.
It's Pamela.
Pamela.
She lives like a princess.
She's
very poorly trained, sure, but she has a great life. I think that's probably my greatest achievement.
That does sound quite good, actually.
That's what I've given to the world.
In fairness.
I've given it all to Pam.
As a comedian, is it a bit exhausting? Do people, you know, if you're going to a dinner party and there's people there who haven't met you before, do they go, oh, this is brilliant. He's going to be hilarious. Mike's so funny.
Well, that's ameliorated by me being, largely speaking, quite antisocial. So I'll generally avoid that. And if I'm going to a dinner party with people who know me, they know what to expect. They know, it'll be my wife who's going to be funnier than me. And so she's
your wife, your sister.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the source of the banter is going to come from, not from me.
There is something in that, though, isn't there? That lots of people who are very, very funny up on stage and perform and bring their energy to that space.
Yeah.
Are a bit antisocial in real life and are a bit quiet.
Yeah, there's a lot of
it's an on-off thing. It's not an on all the
introvert,
time.
Introvert, extrovert.
Uh-huh.
It's a real thing, to have. There's a mix, absolutely. And I find often after a show, I know a couple of comics who like to do a show and then all they want to do is go out and celebrate and meet people. And I mean, I just want to sort of disappear. I'm sometimes quite grateful for the long drive because I sort of need that kind of quiet.
The decompression.
Sort of decompress and shut down slowly.
Are you always looking for material? Are you always mining for material?
Yeah. That doesn't... I mean, there's literally a notebook physically in my pocket as we speak. Yeah. So that's always... Because you have... I find, and I think a lot of comics find, you have... The ideas you find the most fun, you'll have at the most inconvenient times. So you sort of got to be ready just in case. For me, it'll be when I'm swimming or changing lanes on a motorway. That's when I laugh. And then you've got to try and remember it. And
don't try with a notebook at that point.
No, exactly. Yeah.
What about political comedy? Because at the moment things are so political in the world and people are very politicised. And I mean, there are comedians who really go down that road. Is that something that you...
I've never done it explicitly, but it bleeds into your work. I think regardless, this show, for example... it's quite a deep subtext, but there's a key character in it who's a person I have tried to semi-fictionalise who's like a sort of the smallest unit of autocrat there is. So it's sort of like autocracy.
I already like it.
It's kind of like the sort of rise of autocracy, but in a tiny sort of ward in a small town in middle England, basically. So that a lot of it is about the behaviours of... you know, how that can creep up on you, and how people react to it, and how most of us are, you know, with this person, are doing what a lot of us in the world are doing, which is hoping it'll all be fine, rather than perhaps battling against it, you know. So it's there, and it's very spottable if you want it, but if you just want to sort of glide over and enjoy some stories and some jokes, then yeah, that's there too.
And obviously, people like Ricky Gervais will have talked extensively about, well, in a very kind of a bullish way, about the fact that when people cancel culture for comics and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You weren't on the receiving end of that much, were you? The kind of, you can't say that, you're offensive kind of thing.
No, I've not.
That's not really your humour, though, is it?
I've never gone down the route of trying to willfully sort of provoke and trigger. There is a trope of, and this has always been there, of trying to say, you know, back in the 90s, it might have just been trying to use the worst swear word.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or it might have been something that was a bit racial that you weren't really in a position to say. That thing of sort of pushing, I think it's okay if someone's pushing something because there's a message to it and there's a reason behind it, but most of the time it's just for a reaction, and then afterwards the person will pretend, I'm a provocative artist, and there might not be much substance to it. So I think, so I've never been a fan of the sort of willful...
But is comedy, triggering. Was comedy, I think cancel culture is probably largely toothless now, but was comedy for a period tricky? Did you have to sort of tiptoe your way through things,
I've never really found that. There was a rise of people saying, "Oh, you can't say anything anymore."
Yeah.
Which was, but normally at the same time they would be saying exactly what they wanted to say.
Yeah. You know? And generally something pretty big at it.
Yeah. And then and they were fine, and they had an audience that was happy to hear that, and that was ever thus, and there was an audience that weren't into that. And what perhaps changed is it was more obvious that there were people out there who say, "Excuse me, I think you need, you know, that's worth confronting, that idea, that trope, that stereotype."
Very lastly, Mike, away with it. Yeah. Is it hard to have a family and to sort of have this one sort of aspect of your life where you're famous and you go and you do these things, and it's all over the place. It's kind of, there's not much routine, I would imagine, to it, and all of that. Is that difficult in terms of family and relationships and all of that?
It can be. This tour, I'm lucky, this tour, is specifically very, very spread out for that very reason. So it's, at the moment, it's something like 70 dates, but it's between January and November. You know, so there's all these sort of gaps. I'm at home more than I'm away, and most of the work I do at home, anyway, so it'll be writing and podcasting and what have you. So I've got better at the work-life balance thing. I haven't got it right by any means. And sometimes I get it too right and I'm under everyone's feet. And do you know what I mean?
And then they say go back to work.
It's a work in progress, okay. I think that.
You were born in 1979, I'm kind of thinking as a teenager in the 90s, were there kind of comedic influences, people that you kind of look back at that era and really admire, or was?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And comedy was always big in our household. So at the time, we'd have been hoovering a lot of Victoria Wood and Rowan Atkinson and Billy Connolly and all that kind of stuff. But I was raised on the Goon Show, Spike Milligan stuff.
Oh wow, going back that kind of old school stuff.
Yeah, and then along come later in the 90s, you've got all the kind of Chris Morris, Brass Eye, Alan Partridge, all that kind of thing. There's some really great stuff.
Really,
it's very, very influential.
Look,
really,
it's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thanks for having me.
On in the
Ambassador?
I'm in the Ambassadors.
Some tickets still available?
On Saturday, yeah, doing a matinee. I think there's some tickets for the matinee. There may be one or two for the evening show, I'm not sure, but certainly for the matinee. I'll be up in Belfast tonight and tomorrow night. And I'm coming back to Ireland in October.
So. Well, we might see you then, but we are delighted to see you now.
Well,
thank you
so much,
for coming in and joining us. That is, on the Thursday interview, Mike Wozniak.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.